Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. I think this episode of Digital Flotsam is going to be more like my original concept for the show. A little more variety, a little more loosely themed. I'm calling this edition Echoes from the Past. It's going to be a little bit all over the place, but it's all going to reflect in some sense on the past through the eyes of the present. So return with us now
to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver! Faster, big fellow! Hail, Silver! Hoy!
The little town of Jackpine crouched like a starved and flea-bitten dog at the foot of Snake Mountain. Its ramshackle wooden buildings were gray and lifeless after years of pollution.
Is it that we too fast and they too slow? Well, I don't know, but they say they want radio. They want radio. They want radio. Suckers never play me on the radio. Is it that we too fast and they too slow? Well, I don't know, but they say they want radio. They want radio. Hey, I'm sending out the signal all across the land. Gripping my mic real tight within my right hand. Start the broadcast on the broadband. My mic sounds nice without the mic stand. Damn, I don't take this hip-hop lightly. Who you know spitting them flows this tightly? Them radio DJs don't like me. They rock it wrong and I'm rocking so rightly. They playlist is mindless and spineless. It stay thick with stress and some violence. It's fake shit, it's nonsense, it's hopeless. Your format's a joke that lacks focus.
Radio, suckers never play me on the radio. Is it that we too fast and they too slow? But now stoned up on the microphone. From the day I was born, I never did nothing wrong. Said rock all night till the break of dawn. Listen to the radio, I bet the fake is on. You got to pay to be played, the take is on. They play the same mate at the same rate as clone. I swear I hear the same song all day long. A bunch of buffoons is acting like cools, rapping tough, bragging about packing gats and stuff. You call yourself black radio, I call you bluff. When you gon' play something that sound like us?
Radio!
We'll be right back.
I have always loved radio. I had the good fortune to be born on the cusp. I was born just after radio's peak and right at the birth of TV. Radio remained a vital force throughout my youth. I actually heard radio serials and radio variety shows live. I used to listen to Don McNeil's Breakfast Club live from Chicago every morning as a young boy. The coolest thing about it was the weather. If Don McNeil mentioned it was snowing that day, I knew there was a very good chance it would be snowing where I lived in New York the very next day. Most days I was either listening to the radio or playing records. I was an audio guy. Cut to the eighth grade, 13 years old. First, I should tell you that the great American pastime of baseball used to be played in the daytime. This meant that ball games were played on weekdays, during the day, when people were at work and kids like me were at school. For many of us, it made listening to the games nearly impossible. I had acquired one of these newfangled transistor radios made by the Japanese. It was about the size of a package of Camel cigarettes, and you could listen to it with a tiny earphone stuck in your ear. It was no stroke of genius to realize that this new tiny radio was ideal for smuggling into places like school, where it was not entirely welcome. I went to work. I was capable of incredible work in those days. I was willing to put intense effort into totally avoiding schoolwork. People thought I was lazy. In fact, I was simply focused. First, I obtained a dictionary. I don't remember where I obtained the dictionary, although I'm sure I didn't buy it. My next step was to destroy it. Using a single-edged razor blade stolen from my dad's medicine chest, I laboriously cut a rectangular hole in the center of hundreds of pages of this dictionary, until I had created a book that looked from the outside to be perfectly normal, but on the inside concealed a hollow section big enough to conceal a transistor radio. It was the perfect plan. On the day of the World Series game, I brought my big thick book into teacher Stanley Juneman's American history class. It was ingenious. Inside this innocent-looking book was my radio tuned to the game. Plugged into the radio was a long thin wire connected to a tiny earphone. I sat at my desk with my left arm resting on the book. The earphone wire was threaded up my left sleeve, across my chest, and down my right sleeve. I sat with my right elbow resting on the desk, with my right hand supporting my chin. To any observer, I looked as though I was sitting enthralled by Mr. Juneman's lecture. My fingers concealed the wire coming out of my sleeve, leading to a tiny earphone pushed into my ear. It was working perfectly. It was the fourth inning. The Yankees had just scored, and I was the only kid in the classroom who knew it. It was pure heaven. I was a genius. Then it happened. Mr. Juneman said, Mr. Fenton. This didn't throw me at all. I was very careful to pay attention to the lecture so as not to look distracted. I was fully prepared to answer any question. I alertly answered, "Yes, sir." With a completely blank expression, Mr. Juneman said, "Perhaps it would be nice if from time to time you could raise your hand and get my attention so you could tell the rest of us the score."
To be a husband.
Yes, all right. A husband. A husband. There are many ways to tell if it's a husband.
Name one.
It is not a piece of string. It can talk and it can sing.
If it couldn't, then it wouldn't be a husband.
It's a funny thing, it isn't hard to love him. As a rule, he is an easygoing guy. And don't ever think the family don't think of him.
For on Father's Day, sometimes he gets a tie.
A husband, a husband. There are different definitions of a husband. May he love and may he live, but there's one thing positive. Every married woman has to have a husband.
Words of wisdom, words of wisdom. That's a woman's viewpoint. Listen to me. A wife, there are different definitions of a wife.
And what's yours?
It is not a powder puff, it is not a pocketbook.
It has got to be a she to be a wife.
Some deduction. A wife, a wife. There are different ways to tell if it's a wife.
For instance,
it can spend and it can shop, it can start and never stop.
If it could, then it would never be a wife.
That's my line. She can buy a pair of shoes and never wear them.
Could be.
Goodness knows she may have clothes she never wore.
Not me.
Though she may have stuff enough to dress a harem. Cause for sale she'll never fail to buy some more.
I love them.
A wife. A wife. She's the apple or the lemon of your life.
Maybe prunes too.
She's not perfect, we'll agree. But a married man can see what a husband's life would be without a wife.
You said it. Does a husband stay at home and do the cooking?
Does a wife slave in an office every day?
Why don't husbands ever say, hello, good looking?
Cause they're looking over bills they have to pay.
A husband.
A wife.
A husband.
A wife.
That's one argument that never has an ending. Jimmy, don't let's fight anymore. You know I love you.
Why don't you tell me more often?
Well, you never give me a chance. You're always yakking. Oh, how dull this world would be
if it wasn't for a husband and his wife.
My wife and I met for the first time under odd circumstances when I was 16 years old. The actual first time we met was pretty uneventful. I was riding on my Raleigh English racer down Victory Boulevard on my way home from a visit to my girlfriend Betsy's house. A glance toward the side of the road revealed that Betsy's sister Annie was standing on the sidewalk. I swung my bike over to the curb and said a courtesy hello to my girlfriend's sister. Annie introduced me to the girl that she was with, named Rosalind. They were both taking a break from rehearsals of a production of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. Annie was a dancer, and Rosalind, I was told, had a major role in the show. Not much occurred between us, but I do remember thinking that in her black leotards, she looked sort of like a beatnik character. I went on home. Not too long after that first uneventful encounter, I met Rosalind again, in the home of my girlfriend. I guess I should explain that at the time I was already feeling that my relationship with my current girlfriend was sort of one-dimensional. And that one dimension, although initially very exciting, was getting to be sort of, well, one-dimensional. Well, that day, it all happened. I was helping Rosalind wash dishes, a very ordinary activity. And I was having fun, a great deal of fun. I was enjoying it immensely. I was enjoying just the simple company of another person. Well, I didn't know it, but from that moment on, my life had changed. I began calling her. Her phone presence seemed to welcome my attention, but every time I asked her out, she would decline. When I asked why, she cited my relationship with Betsy and how she couldn't go out with a friend's boyfriend. I assured her that my relationship with Betsy was over and that its end had been coming for a while. But she stuck to her guns. After many attempts to take her out, I finally accepted the fact that she just wouldn't do it. In an overdramatic, teenaged last effort, I made a phone call in which I announced that I was giving up. I told her I felt badly because I thought we really could have had something special together. And I hung up. I sat there for a while and thought, "You stupid idiot. You just quit. Quitting doesn't get you anywhere." So I sheepishly dialed her number again. This time her younger sister answered the phone. I asked for Roz. Her sister said, "Who is this?" I told her my name and she immediately said, "You made my sister cry," and hung up on me. I sat there holding the phone and smiling. I had her. Roz, of course, eventually agreed to start seeing me, and she's still seeing me. In fact, I had breakfast with her this morning, some 40-plus years since I first set eyes on her. She's still the one.
Moments ago, over here in Ocean City, New Jersey, they crowned the winner of the 1970 Most Beautiful Face Contest. And we've been granted the first interview with the winner. Is our lovely guest in front of the camera?
Yes, I am.
Well, wait a minute. You're a man, aren't you?
That's right.
Well, you must be the first man to have ever won the Most Beautiful Face Contest.
I believe I am.
To be perfectly honest with you, I was all set to talk to a young lady. I don't know as my questions are particularly appropriate. Your vital statistics?
7 1/4, 15 1/2, 32.
Well, let's start at the fundamentals. What's your name and where are you from?
Fonstock P. Beaudry of Moline, Illinois.
Well, congratulations, Fonstock. I have been requested to remind you of the obligations you assumed when you were crowned a few moments ago. You know, of course, you'll be showing your beautiful face all over this country this coming year.
Yes, will I be chaperoned on that tour?
Sure you will. Incidentally, should you do anything to bring disgrace or cause scorn to fall upon the Most Beautiful Face Contest, the committee, and or its sponsors, then your title will pass to the first runner-up.
Well, I don't plan to do anything wrong.
Well, the committee just couldn't take that chance. Fonstock, could you tell us of that magic moment when you heard your name announced as winner? Did you cry a little?
Oh, a little, I guess. But I would describe it as feeling dumbfounded. That's about how I'd describe it.
You know, now that I look at you, you do have a beautiful face at that.
My neatly chiseled features stand out.
Classic Grecian, I'd say.
I'm told they're Roman.
Ah. I know your eyes are well set apart. Well, how did you come by all this beauty?
Well, both my parents were pretty.
Do you have any pretty brothers and sisters at home?
No, I'm a beautiful only child.
Are you the least bit self-conscious? I mean, are you,
embarrassed to be so beautiful?
Yeah.
No, I'm used to it now.
You get used to that. Do you notice women stopping and staring at your beautiful face on the street?
Yes.
You get used to that, too?
Yes.
Well, as the possessor of a beautiful face, do you take any special precautions, like when you shave?
No, I use a fresh blade every day.
Uh-huh. Well, how about in the wintertime? Do you put a protective muffler about your features to protect them from the cold weather?
No, I just walk with my back to the wind.
Well, Fahnestock, as you know, all happy times really race by. Have you given any thought to the future? I mean, is it Hollywood in the movies or television or just what?
Well, of course, I've thought about that life of glamour and glitter, tinsel. But I've decided against it. I don't want to be just another beautiful face.
So there you have it, another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. So as I advised you at the opening, we've heard a few items from the past viewed through the lens of the present. That final story about the winner of the Most Beautiful Face contest was by none other than the late Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, otherwise known as Bob and Ray, the only two men that have ever made me wet myself. If you're new to these guys, you've got to go to bobandray.com and check out the massive library there of their recorded work. I think they are two of the funniest men that have ever lived. I thank Larry Josephson for making their work available to me. For more credit where credit is due, check out the digitalflotsam.org site and read the show notes for this episode. I will also point you to places online where you can buy some of the great music you've heard on this show. And finally, the credit you've heard at the end of every Digital Flotsam.
And Peter holded the microphone.